You are listening to the Slow Living Podcast, and I'm your host, Stephanie O'Day. What if I told you that you could truly have the life of your dreams, the life you've always wanted, one filled with abundance, joy, and a sense of purpose? It's absolutely possible, and I see it each and every day with my coaching clients. It all starts with learning how to slow down. You deserve to live the life you've always dreamt about. Let's get started. Hi there, Slow Down Society. Welcome back to another edition of the Slow Living Podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie O'Day. Today, we are going to talk about money. Again, this is episode 127, and money comes up a lot, especially in coaching, and especially if you're trying to live a slow life, because how can you afford to live a slow life, especially if you are kind of surrounded by hustle culture and the idea that more is better and go, 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 more, more, more. So this is episode 127, and we're going to call it the importance of financial literacy or financial literacy. And that's really what it's about, is how you become literate of your own finances and figuring out what it is you need in order to get to where it is you want to go. So I've recorded way back, and we're kind of doing the foundation of what slow living is and what it's all about. So in episode 15, I introduced that episode, and it was titled "What is Your FIRE Number?" And then because it's such an important aspect of living a slow life, I re-ran that as an encore episode, episode 66, and in the intro, added a little bit more. If you're going to listen to either 15 or 66, they're essentially the same because 66 is a rerun, but it has a little bit more info in the intro. So I would recommend 66. So that's the encore episode of What's Your FIRE Number. And FIRE is an acronym. And I shared last week with the yoga episode just what a nerd I am when it comes to acronyms. So, and I just, I can't get enough of them. And it actually, it's funny, it came probably when I was 8 or so. And both of my grandfathers served in different branches of the military. And I am trying to remember now which grandpa shared this acronym with me. I'm not exactly sure. I think it was my dad's dad. And then I fact checked him with my mom's dad. But he shared what snafu meant, which is a military term, which of course we all use as a chaotic event, but it's an acronym, and it's situation, normal, all, then effed up. And the idea in my little 7-year-old, 8-year-old brain that a bad word was hiding in another word was just beyond fascinating to me. And I just, since then, anytime I see a word, I fixate on it and try and make more words out of it. And that's just one of the quirks of Steph. So FIRE, back to that episode 66 that I'd love for you to listen to. I want you to figure out your FIRE number. So that's financial independence, retire early. The retire early part is not really necessary. I now throw a B in there with my coaching clients. I want you to find your FI number, your financial independence number, but I throw in a B in the acronym. So it's financial independence before retiring early. And that's the idea that you know where you're going, you know what you're working towards, because your job is not your personality. It's not your identity. It's just where you go to make money. It's just where you go to get the stuff to fuel the fire, essentially the fire. So figure that down and dirty number out. And the formula that I gave you is whatever your yearly expenses are multiply that by 25. And that's a very, very down and dirty number, with the idea then that your money will compound and make baby money. And then when you are retired, the rule of thumb for withdrawal is about an average of 4%. So if you make $100,000, if right now I'm just going to give you easy math. If your expenses, not what you make, but your expenses are $100,000 a year times 25, you know, then you'll need to save $2.5 million. And then from that $2.5 million that's in the bank, in your different retirement accounts, safely, when you are able to retire, you withdraw on an annual basis about 4%, which then equals $100,000 a year. And depending on how long you retire, depending on your withdrawal rate, that is the pot of money. And the hope is that the interest is keeping up with your withdrawal. Okay, down and dirty. I am not a financial expert. Absolutely do your own research. And that is what this episode is all about, is you becoming financially literate and not taking advice from me, from any other person on the internet, from a financial advisor who is probably wanting a percentage of your portfolio. You, once you're a full-fledged grown-up human, which you are, if you're listening to this, you are in charge. We've talked in the past that no one is going to come and save you. And it might be super harsh to come to that reality, but I like instead to look at it as freeing, as exhilarating. Okay, this is it. This is what adulting is all about. And I'm going to take charge and do this. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about my financial literacy path and how some of these things might sound familiar to you. Some of them might not. If this is all brand new information, that's super exciting, because now you have a rabbit hole to go down and you can geek out about all of these things the way that I have in the past quite a bit. Next week, I am going to be interviewing a woman who wrote a memoir on how she and her husband, quote unquote, retired early in their early 30s, and they ended up buying a farm in Vermont, and now she's a financial blogger. And actually, I think her husband went back to work. So they probably didn't do the RE part, but they did the FI part, the financial independence. They hit that number at a really early age by being immensely frugal. And because of that, then they got to decide on purpose that they didn't need to work their corporate job. They could go live on a farm. Now, this is a very privileged lifestyle. If you are struggling and you are living paycheck to paycheck and there's not enough money to pay your current bills, and the idea of saving and being more frugal just isn't applicable to you, because you're already couponing, you're already doing these things in order just to make ends meet, this episode might be kind of triggering and annoying and very, very privileged. And that's okay. You do not need to listen to it. And I'm sorry. And my best advice would be then probably to try and find additional streams of revenue, of income for yourself, or look for a higher paying job. This episode, and then definitely next week's episode, is about people deciding to be frugal on purpose, not out of a hardship or necessity. If you are working 2 to 3 jobs and you're garnering government assistance and things like that, this is not applicable. And I'm not the right person, unfortunately, to advise you. I would ask for you to look for county programs, try and find help in other ways. This will come across as probably really obnoxious. So don't listen. Okay, so for the rest of you, I'm going to share a little bit of how I was raised, how Adam was raised, how it helped sort of define who we are with our financial literacy, and then how we're raising our kids, although they are living in the suburbs in Silicon Valley. They we're trying to keep them grounded and realize that it's important as they embark on their early 20s to start saving for their 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, even though it seems so far-fetched. That's what we're teaching them now. So growing up, actually, I guess I'll just quickly define financial literacy in case that term seems a little out there. So it's really the ability to understand and use various financial skills, including personal financial management, budgeting, and investing. And it empowers you, it empowers individuals to make informed and effective decisions about your money. And that's what I meant earlier when I said, one, nobody's going to save you. And two, no one will advise you in your best interest. You will always have your best interest at heart and take as much knowledge and wisdom as you can, and then filter it through your own life, through your own needs and wants, through your own ethics and morals, and what makes sense to you. Many people want to be told exactly what to do. They want a prescription. They want to check it all off and say, and then I'll do this, and then I'll do that, and then I know I'm the right way. So kind of, but there's no one size fits all recipe to life. And so that's why I love that acronym for SLOW, of simply look only within. Do the research, ask the questions, go down the rabbit holes, geek out, go to the library, read as much as you can, and then filter and decide on purpose what makes sense to you. So growing up, my brother and I, we lived in a frugal way, even though probably at the time we didn't realize we were living in a frugal way. My parents absolutely did plan for retirement, and while my brother and I, we had all of our wants, and we certainly were not ever made to feel like we were struggling. We were aware that other people's families maybe sometimes traveled a bit more, maybe ate in restaurants a little bit more, and we did not. And it was fine. And most of our at least especially for me, because I'm 7.5 years older than my brother. So sometimes I think we've had two different childhoods. There were road trips to visit grandparents and different people. That was what our vacationing was. I spent a lot of time with my grandparents and my grandma and grandpa. They were born in their early 20s, and so they were depression kids. And my grandma's nickname was Bunny, and so she was called Grandma Bunny. And the way she got that nickname was her family, in order to make ends meet, raised rabbits for food and sold them. And grandma's job was to go out and check on the rabbits and feed them. And that's how she got that nickname, Bunny. So her frugality sort of filtered down and created the life, her adult life. And I spent a lot of time with her and with grandpa. And grandpa came to America on a boat from Scotland. And if you know me in real life, you know once in a while I joke that, oh, I don't do that because I'm Scottish. And to me, Scottish equals frugal. And yes, it's a stereotype. And yes, perhaps I'm casting judgment when it's not warranted in all situations, but from my own personal experience, I learned how to be pretty frugal and at times Scottish in some ways might be a little stingy. We were not raised that way at all, although my grandfather's absolute favorite joke, and he would do it at as a way to kind of warm up the crowd at church events, is he would tell his Scottish joke of this woman goes to the newspaper because she wants to put an obit in to let them know that her husband has passed away. And so the guy at the newspaper says, okay, well, what do you want it to say? And she said, oh, Angus is dead. And the guy's like, oh, okay, well, that's really short. Do you want to add to it? And she goes, no, 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 I don't want to pay for that. And he says, oh, well, you get another 3 words for the same price. So she thought about it for a while. And then she says, okay. And she says, Angus is dead. Car for sale. And so that was Grandpa's favorite joke. And so that is just sort of permeated into my subconscious and sort of created who I am and how I grew up is just save, always save, save for a rainy day, save, save, save. Grandpa would often bring home a dozen donuts. I don't think it was after church. I think we would, but Grandma would then save half of them. She would wrap them individually in saran wrap and then foil and put them in the freezer. And so her freezer was just filled, especially after she passed away and Mom and I were cleaning it out, filled with tiny little mystery foil packets. I vividly remember bringing deli sandwiches home, and Grandma would open the bread and take out half of the deli meat and then wrap it up and freeze it to then make future sandwiches. And so that's just that saving for a rainy day, squirreling things away, I saw firsthand an awful lot. In my own parents' life, they built a house, and the way they got the property to build the house in this lovely, amazing, gorgeous area was the city deemed the property unbuildable. My dad was an architect and had lots of engineering friends and decided, hey, I can figure out a way to make it buildable. Give me the property. So we got a good price on the property. And then we built the house. So I mean, yes, there were contractors and engineers and subcontractors and all these things, but I spent a lot of time on a job site and took care of my little brother on a job site every weekend. We were the cleanup crew and we picked up scraps. We picked up their Gatorade bottles. We did kind of a lot of manual labor. We moved plywood around the job site. We learned how to put insulation into the forms. We would bring rebar around. We also learned how to pour concrete and use large 2x4s to kind of pound the concrete down. And then we would use the trowels and the floaters to smooth it out. I mean, I learned how to do all of this before I was a teenager. And it's just, this is what we did. If something was fixed or needed to be fixed or needed to be made, we would find a way to do it. And those were really like deep ingrained lessons. I'm still kind of a DIYer around the house. My brother and his wife most certainly are. My parents still are. My dad is in his 70s, and I wish he wouldn't, but he does. Climbs up on the roof with the leaf blower to get the leaves out of the gutter. My parents have always done their own yard work, cleaned their own house. Now that they're older, they do have housekeeping that comes in. But that's just what we did and how we were raised. Okay, so then moving on to Steph in her early 20s, she made some mistakes, and it is what it is. It's okay because I've lived to tell the tale. But when I was in college and figured out that in kind of the student union and the surrounding areas, there were tables getting you to sign up for credit cards, and in exchange for the credit card, they'd give me a Frisbee, a free Frisbee, or a t-shirt. or a koosh ball with the colors of my college. And I liked free things. And so I would sign up for credit cards. And Adam essentially kind of did the same thing. And so our first few years of marriage, we unfortunately played around with credit cards a little too much. We would charge Chinese dinners, pizzas, McDonald's, t-shirts at the mall. And after not that long, realized we were about, 30-ish thousand or so in consumer debt, which sounds so ridiculous now for me to say out loud. But I think for us, it was probably a lesson we needed to learn and scratch that itch of, I could buy this and I could buy that and I could buy this. And so we did. When it comes right down to it, we all just want to climb into bed each night feeling calm, content, and at peace. We want to know that we were able to keep all the balls in the air and were productive without neglecting our own needs and wants. I know. I get it. That is why I recorded a free masterclass on the 10 things happy, successful people do each and every day, and I'd love for you to join us. Learn simple and practical tips to reclaim the sanity and joy in your home and family at stephanieoday.com/masterclass. And then we had baby number one and realized, okay, this isn't cool. And we knew we wanted a house and we knew we wanted to be full-fledged grownups. And so we just stopped. At the time, I was spending a lot of time going to the local library, reading personal development books, financial books. I would bring home VHS tapes and we would sit on the couch. And I vividly remember watching this interview with Warren Buffett, and Adam and I kept pausing it and writing things down. And he's talking about the importance of investing and compound interest, all of these different things. And I just remember him like looking at the camera and how he picked out stocks. And it just made so much sense of, well, I figured I'd drink a Coca-Cola every day, so that's a good thing to invest in. And well, I like McDonald's and everybody else I know likes McDonald's, so I decided to invest in McDonald's. And he's like, and Gillette razors. Well, I use Gillette razors. I think it's a great razor, so I'm going to invest in them. So that sort of mindset kind of came about in our mid to late 20s. And so it took about 2 years. And we essentially, in one of the years, paid off all of that debt. And then in the second year, still continued to live super frugally and saved roughly the same amount of money. And again, back to that privilege part. I was working full-time. Adam was working full-time. We were lucky enough to live in an apartment where the rent wasn't astronomical for our SF Bay Area salaries. Instead, we literally canceled everything. We stopped going out. We essentially stopped seeing friends because our friends spent a lot of money drinking and just doing things. We didn't even camp for those 2 years to save money. Because camping in general is pretty inexpensive, but the way we did it is we would buy coolers of food and drink, and it turned into kind of an expensive weekend. So we just didn't do that. If we wanted to go out to dinner, often we would just call our parents and ask to come over, and they would feed us, which again, totally privileged. I completely acknowledge that, but it's what we did. If we wanted Taco Bell, we would go through the change compartment in Adam's truck, or I would flip over couch cushions, often in the laundry room of the apartment. If I looked under the washing machine and dryer, I could find quarters. And so I literally remember finding like $2.33. And so then us walking down there and counting out the money for our bean burrito at Taco Bell. I think they were each 79 cents at the time. So anyway, that's how we lived. And it sounds so silly, but I'm nostalgic about it. I loved that time. We really band together. We were on a united front, and it was just a much simpler time. Yes, we had a baby and a toddler, but honestly, there's a bunch of different ways to have kids frugally, and we were very lucky in that we got practically anything we needed through the baby showers and different things. So again, super privileged, and I know that. Okay. So I guess I'm glossing over things, but because of that saved money and how we were able to get houses pretty early. I have shared with you before, and it's all laid out in the Mommy Blogger Next Door book, but I quit work on a whim one day because I felt as if it wasn't safe for my daughter. And we had already been living frugally. That was that second year, and had a little bit of money saved and knew we weren't going to be able to buy in the San Francisco area. So we got out a map. This was an old school paper map that Adam got out of the glove compartment. We just sort of branched out and then realized where we could live and it would still be okay for Adam to commute. And I called a realtor, and then that next weekend we started looking at houses, and then the realtor put us with her mortgage broker, and we just went for it. And that's one nice thing about being financially literate, is it looks like some opportunities fall in your lap, but I kind of liken it to a coiled spring ready to become unsprung when an opportunity arises, or a coiled snake ready to pounce. Once you have the basics of financial literacy and you know what you're working towards, when a good opportunity comes, you can run the numbers and you know it makes sense to move on it, rather than dismissing it like, oh, it's not the right time, or oh, we don't have enough money. You're able to make a thoughtful and calculated decision. And so from there, we got a house in Central Valley, and then a few years later upgraded to a larger house because I still at the time had a little bit of lifestyle creep and wanted this larger house. And then all of a sudden, Adam could kind of sniff out that the economy was shifting. So this was 2006-ish or so. And he called me and said, we got to get back to the Bay Area. We're heading into a recession. We got to get out. I said, oh, okay. So then, unbeknownst to me, because he had kind of a longish commute, he called Nancy, the realtor, and he arrived home. And within 30 minutes, Nancy, the realtor, was at our house, and we were signing papers to put the house on the market. And so that's how we ended up moving back to the Bay Area. And lived with my parents for a few months. And again, we were very fortunate that we had this safety net, and then were able to buy again in this particular area that we wanted to live in and raise the kids and have them in school. And then there we are. So then from there, we now have moved into a larger house, which is five houses away from that first house. So all of the schooling and things. So we've essentially had and moved four houses. Sometimes it gets brought up that if you have a smaller income, living frugally and doing this kind of stuff is just really out of reach. And yes, it's true. I like to use my brother and sister-in-law as an example, and I think they listen to the podcast. So I'm absolutely talking about you because I'm so proud of you. They are teachers, and they actually own three homes. They have two investment properties and then the house that they live in with their family. and they also had financial literacy at a very young age and knew what they wanted and found a way to make it happen. And I'm immensely proud of them. I think they're fantastic. And they are so humble that they would be the first to say that they got lucky. And they did. Things have changed. The economy has changed. I know all of those things. That said, every generation says this is the most expensive time. We've never seen it this expensive. I was told that growing up. Other people have too. Every generation says that, and it's up to you to use the cards that you've been dealt in the best possible way. And the best possible way is to learn and study and investigate and see what you can do with the cards that you've been dealt. There's I think it's an Eleanor Roosevelt quote, and she says, "The harder I work, the luckier I get." I personally don't think learning is hard work, and that's all I am suggesting that you do is learn. I don't personally think being frugal and delaying gratification is hard work. It's fun for me. I personally get more excited and more of a dopamine hit and rush by saving money than I do from spending money. That said, we've relaxed quite a bit with like total scrimping and saving. Sorry, I wanted to drink a little bit more coffee for my throat. We live where we live. I've got three older kids. They're essentially teenagers, and they want the fun Adidas Air Force shoes or whatever they're called. They want a new bike. They were in club sports. So we are not, I don't think we're frugal really anymore. But we're fine because we know where we are with our numbers. We're paying attention to it on a spreadsheet. When some of the books that I would get from the library when I was trying to read as much as I could, one of the series of books was called The Tightwad Gazette. And some of the things sounded familiar. Some of the things Grandma Bunny had already sort of instilled in me, like reusing plastic bags and reusing foil and that kind of stuff. But some of the things like making your own shampoo and doing some things, just I've never done. You can. One of the biggest ways we've always saved money is by meal planning. And that was essentially why the Crock-Pot was such a staple when I was a newlywed and young mom, is it was the easiest way to meal plan. It forced me to meal plan. It forced me to think ahead of what is for dinner and make sure all of the food and the ingredients are in the house by 6, 7 a.m. so I can plop it in the pot, push a button, and walk away. If you're not a meal planner, you should be a meal planner. I'll have Taylor drop some links in the show notes, but I have an article that I wrote on the site of meal planning for dummies. And then I crossed out the word dummies and called it normal people, because I know you're not a dummy if you're listening to this, but meal planning for normal people. Pay attention, know what's going on. In a previous episode, I had interviewed Erin Chase, the $5 mom, and she had talked about how she doesn't use DoorDash. I don't use DoorDash. We never have. I think my kids might have perhaps, and I know my middle daughter in college does. That said, they have a budget. They know and they watch their money and they pay attention to their spreadsheet. And if they are going to buy something or need to buy something, they run it by Adam and I, and we talk about whether or not it's a good purchase or not, and how much it costs, and how many hours of work you would need to work in order to pay for the thing. And that was a kind of a harsh lesson that my dad helped me. Actually, he wasn't judgy about it. It was really interesting. Adam and I were dating, and I was working at the San Francisco Zoo at the time, and my income, my salary was $5.25 an hour. And I bought Adam for one of his birthdays, kind of an expensive boombox CD player radio thing, because again, super old. And that was the cool technology at the time. And it was $250, which is so funny because $250 to me now, I would think twice about. But Steph at that time had money in her pocket and was like, whatever, I have the money, I'm going to spend it. And so then my dad's like, well, what do you make an hour? So I told him, and he says, so does it make sense then to spend a week and a half or so worth of salary on one present for your boyfriend? And I remember thinking, yeah, sure, whatever. I have the money. It's fine. And kind of flouncing off because I was a teenager and knew everything. But those are the life lessons that have stuck with me and the ones that I'm trying to help embark on my own children as they grow and decide on purpose what they want to do with their money. Okay, pretty people. I hope this was helpful. I hope it was enlightening. You don't need to spend money to learn this stuff. I'm going to put a link in the show notes, and there's a list of books that I recommend. Check them out from your library. Don't buy them. Check them out from your library. If they are something that you want to flip back through or have a reference, then decide to buy them. And just start really paying attention. A big part of slow living is to keep your eyes on your own paper, or keep your eyes on your own yoga mat, and don't worry what people are doing down the street or what your neighbors are doing or someone who says that, well, of course you have to take your kids to Europe. No, you can be a great parent. You can have great kids. You don't need to do all of these things just because other people are doing it. You decide what the next best step is for you to take. All right. If you need help, reach out to me. If you want to put yourself on my calendar, that's stephanieoday.com/mindset. If those times don't work for you, email me. I'm happy to hop on a call with you. If you think coaching would be helpful and you want to see that I'm a real person, do it. Book one of those calls. I'm happy to help. Simple Shortcuts to Peace is still open. That's at stephanieoday.com/peace. It's never ending. It's not going to go anywhere. So you're not behind if you didn't sign up in December or January. There's once a month calls we need on the second Saturday of the month. And every participant also gets free coaching calls with me, 2 free coaching calls that you can redeem at any time. There's an entire module all about finances, and the way the pyramid is built is it's time management and then health and finances. And you can stay in that bottom foundation of the pyramid for years, for decades, and really be strong and stable before you start adding the other blocks on. Because this is it. This is your life. And I want you to love it and cherish it and be so excited that even if you got a windfall of money or won the lottery or something, you wouldn't actually change all that many aspects of your life because you're already living a pretty charmed life now. All right. Consider yourself loved and hugged. I think you are absolutely wonderful. I will be back next week and I will be interviewing Liz from the Frugal Woods website. And so she's got a memoir that I read and we're going to talk about. So if you wanted to read something, just for funsies, it's not a how to retire early book, financial independence. It's more of a memoir, and in her sharing her story, very similarly to how I just shared mine. But if you felt like you wanted to read leading into next week's interview, go for it. Find her website. It's the Frugal Woods, frugal and then woods, all of one word. And And anyway, it's fun. I think the memoir is called Meet the Frugal Woods. I have headphones in right now, so I'm wired to my computer and I know that it's on the couch because I was reading it last night on the couch under my blankie. All right. Have a great week. I'm proud of you and I think you're wonderful.
Do you have a slow living story to share? Leave me a voicemail at stephanieoday.com/podcast with any questions, comments, feedback, or testimonials, and I will be sure to include it in an upcoming episode. Also, if you found value in this episode, please share it with your family and friends and subscribe through your favorite podcast provider. The more you share, comment, and leave positive reviews, the more people we can reach and share the slow living lifestyle and messaging. Thank you, Slow Down Society, and have an absolutely wonderful day.